Did you know that approximately 30% of children of any age in Kenya live with one biological parent? According to research done by the Better Care Network, in the East Africa regional context, Kenya maintains one of the lowest rates of living with both biological parents for children 0 to 14 at 58%. These numbers are worrying, but it is a reality for a lot of parents. To illustrate this, one of the topics that has been heavily requested time and time again on the podcast is shining a light on co-parenting. Relationships break, and parents have to figure out a way to share the parenting responsibilities for the child or the children that they have. And those are the lucky few. More often than not, mothers are left with the sole responsibility of taking care of their kids once their partner either refuses to acknowledge the child or just runs away from any responsibilities previously held. There are many reasons parents find themselves in this situation. This episode is not about those reasons. This episode is here to guide anyone who finds themselves in this situation. I thought it would be timely to include it in the Holiday Survival Guide series, a series of episodes I'm doing to help parents navigate this holiday season. For parents who are not together, figuring out how and where their kids are going to be spending their holidays can be a daunting task, on top of every other consideration that needs to be made for sharing parental responsibilities. This is Mama Tales, a podcast on our collective motherhood journey. I'm your host, Sally Kuria. In this episode, I sit down with someone who deals with this every single day, and through her experience and expertise, we might learn a thing or two about co-parenting.
My name is Ivy Kadongo. I am a family lawyer, but I deal mainly with children matters, that is in the civil space, that is custody, maintenance, it extends to guardianships, adoptions, etc.
The reason I asked Ivy to come to the podcast was to understand co-parenting, especially from the perspective of the law. When dealing with kids, preserving their rights and their needs is something that needs to be at the core of parenting, separated or not. Things can get dicey when parents are not together. So how do we protect these rights?
Now, co-parenting is two parents, whether married or not, raising their child or their children together. Okay. So it might be court-forced co-parenting, okay, or parties just agree, you know, let's set our differences aside, let's get into a parenting arrangement. So actually they're called parental responsibility agreements. So it can either be ordered by the court, or you can decide to be civil about it and you get into an agreement. So that's what co-parenting is, just people who are not together having to raise a child together.
I have to be honest, my idea of co-parenting and shared custody comes from watching a lot of movies. In my head, for the law to get involved, a parent is taken to court. This way they either lose or share custody. It is what I have been fed, but I don't think it's accurate in this setting.
I usually say that what precedes co-parenting is a lot of sometimes acrimony. Broken relationships, broken marriages, sometimes children born out of wedlock where one parent is married to somebody else. So sometimes people will have to go to court, especially if there's, you know, threat maybe of violence or the circumstances require the intervention of a court. That's when now the court is involved. Sometimes the situation is very dire. Okay, so somebody has completely refused to honor their parental obligations, particularly regarding maintenance, and you're forced to run to court. A child is, you know, a child is required to be in school, fees has not been paid, and the other parent is not cooperating, you have to go and get court's intervention. Sometimes there's a parent who's taken off with a child or with the children. You don't know where the children or the child is. You have to go to court and ask the court, please give me an order, a production order. So that's an order to produce the children. So court will be involved a lot of times if the situation calls for it.
Ivy was quick to add that court should be the last resort, the only option when there's no other thing or form of agreement that can be reached. This is because court cases can take time, months, years, decades even, and let's not even talk about the cost. What then should you do before things escalate to it?
First, extend an olive branch to the other party, okay? It takes a lot of maturity. It takes a lot of forgiveness, because sometimes you're telling somebody who's been violated or very hurt by the other parent to extend an olive branch. I know it sounds very difficult, but sometimes when you realize that the children are the ones that are suffering, you will put your feelings aside. There's the different stages, okay? So there's the first stage where the parents themselves agree, you know, let's just sit down, let's agree, let's get into something. Sometimes people are not able to agree without the assistance of third parties. So you will find some parties go to a relative or someone or an elder, somebody, maybe their best couple, okay? And they will sit down, they will be able to come up with some sort of agreement, and then they go to the advocates so that they can just, you know, clean up that agreement and put it in the legal jargon that people like to say, legal jargon. Yeah. But yeah, just a presentable agreement. Sometimes that is not possible. So now the next level is now you go to the advocates. So like how I like to do things is that I will extend invitation to the other party and propose mediation. So mediation, you can come by yourself. You can get counsel. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will say that they would want us to refer them to a mediator. There are people who are credited and credited mediators. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you will send them to that mediator. Now, other times, or most of the times what happens, the mediation is facilitated by the advocates. So you come with your advocate, I come with my client, and then we sit down and see, you know, we try and formulate something. So one party has a proposal, the other party has their proposal. We try and find a middle ground. Another situation is where now somebody has already filed a case in court, but the court feels that that is a case that can be mediated. Or even the other party who has been sued, for example, suggests that, you know, let's try and mediate. Yeah. So the court has what we call the court annexed mediation. So a mediator is appointed by the court. The court has a panel of mediators. So your case is allocated to a certain mediator who now facilitates now the mediation. Mm-hmm. So in the court annexed one, the advocates don't participate too much. They are merely advisors, okay? So it's the parties who are doing the talking. So if you need to consult with your advocate during the session, that's fine. But it's supposed to be between the mediator and the parties. The advocate's role is very secondary.
I wondered if kids have any role or say in this, especially those that can discern the situation and have their own ideas on what's best for them.
I think you've had this phrase of best interest of the child being thrown all over. Yeah. And I don't even think that people understand what best interest really is. Mm-hmm. But best interest is very, I want to say, subjective, especially when you're having two parents who are not agreeing on how to co-parent. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you this, one parent is saying the other parent is not fit to be a parent because A, B, C, D. This other one is saying you're not fit because da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. We never interact with the children per se, okay, to hear what the children say. Mm-hmm. Because anyway, children are supposed to be protected from all of this, yeah. Okay? So you're dealing with the parents who now are saying they're the ones who know what is best for their children, which is true actually, because nobody can parent your child better than you and your co-parents, okay? But sometimes the parenting the emotions are clouding objectivity. So you will, for example, 0 to 10 years, what we call children of tender years, it has always been said that they are better off with their mother. There has been research on it and whatnot, because, you know, they're still young. They need to be, you know, taken care of by their mothers. Those 0 maybe to 3 are still breastfeeding. So in that case, the mother is better placed to have them. Again, the courts are now shocking us. Nowadays, we are having decisions where children of that age are being given to their dads. So sometimes when you sit and, you know, you're honest with yourselves, you know, you either the mother or the father is better placed to have the child for reasons A, B, C, D. Sometimes you will find even, you know, the mom is not able to be there full time, but the dad is, maybe because of her work commitment, she travels out. Then you agree that let the dad be the one, the living parent, let the mom be taking the children when she's around, or the other way around. So it is, we never really hear the side of the child's side of the story. Okay, so we are just dealing with the parents here. But I have to say this, it gets to an age where you cannot force a child to stay with a parent if they don't want. So we are talking maybe 14, 15, 16. No, that's a really mature child, okay? Yeah. So you can't force them to stay with a parent they don't want to stay with. Mm-hmm. So at that point, if, for example, you got into an agreement and let's say one parent was given the custody, the actual custody, you know, you live with the children, and then, you know, the children grow up and maybe one of the kids is like, you know, I want to go live with dad. It necessitates the review of that kind of an agreement. So sometimes the children's or the child's voice can be taken into account, but only if, you know, they are mature enough to understand the situation. And even that happens in court. The court will want to interview children. Sometimes the younger ones just to gauge, okay, but taking into account and factoring in, you know, what the child has said and actually considering what they have said and you know, when you're doing a decision, it may be children of older years. Because sometimes, I mean, four-year-olds will tell you, oh, I want to go to daddy because they eat, I don't know, sweets there. Or I want to go to mommy because we went to somewhere da-da-da and ate. So children of... you know, younger children, you really can't take into consideration what they are saying. Yeah. But even the law says you can, you should. I mean, if it is necessary, you can hear children. But I mean, if they are too young, then you can't take too. I mean, you can't consider whatever they say too much. Yeah.
Let's take a short break here. And during this break, I will play you a short clip from Cynthia Anyango, a project manager in the tech space, an avid outdoorsy person, and a single mom of a six-year-old boy. Cynthia shared her story before on the podcast, on almost losing access to her son because she had to leave him with his dad for a year to figure her stuff out in order to take care of him better. You can find her story on episode 22 of the podcast. Since then, they have found a healthier rhythm to their co-parenting. And here is how she and her son's father navigate the holidays.
The other thing that he gets to do is he visits his dad. And there I understand he also has friends and gets to hang out with them, as well as now his other side of the family. When it comes to Christmas, so the past two Christmases, he has spent it with his dad, because I guess that's where the dad has a lot of time to just spend with him, uninterrupted by work and other life things. And I like that he gets to do that because he has more family in terms of uncles, cousins, nieces, grandparents on that side than he has on my side. So he gets to just bond with his other community. Then I get to also just get time to decompress and prepare for another year with him. So that has just been the last two Christmases. Before that, I would spend Christmas time with him. And yeah, so we are a small community, so nothing over the top.
Welcome back. In this episode, we are talking about co-parenting. Raising kids can be expensive. Taking care of their basic needs alone can strain any parent's pocket, regardless of it being a two-parent home or not. I can only imagine how complicated navigating this is for co-parents.
Maintenance is actually the biggest hurdle when it comes to co-parenting. I think maintenance is gives us very serious headaches, okay? Because now, when you're now, let's say, together in a relationship, there's a way you help each other, okay? So once you're separated, now you're handling your bills by yourself. The other parent is handling their bills by themselves. Somebody has been forced to go and seek alternative accommodation. Okay. So those are costs that now arise, which were not there before. So there's very many changes when it comes to, you know, finances when people separate. So the one parent will be saying the other one wants the money. The money is not even, the money being asked is not for the children. It is, you know, for the parents' interest. They want to use this money for this. In fact, when we were together, they used to do this and this. So for sure, this money is going to go to that. So there's usually a lot of accusations of that. So what I usually see when parents are doing, for example, now the mediation, come up with a budget of what you spend in a month. Okay. So if, let's say, rent is 100K, shopping is 50K, you have a nanny. And I like to say this, if, because people don't think nannies are necessary. I mean, we are now in a world where nannies are necessary. Okay. So if this child was not there, the nanny would not be there, isn't it? Yeah. So you need to factor in that cost. There's a nanny. There are all these costs, okay? Now, after you get the total, I like to say pick the items that you'd want to handle, then ask the other parent to handle what you would, or rather ask them to pick something from the list. The figures, of course, will be disputed a lot of the times. That is why for me, I find it difficult to have people tabulate and say, my current expenditure is 400, pay me 200. Because sometimes it will vary.
Yeah.
So I would rather that you itemize all, you know, all your responsibilities. So if there's rent, there's shopping, there's clothing, there's school fees, there's medical, if there's no insurance, for example, there's medical expenses you set aside money for. There are all these things. Then pick what you are able to pay for, because again, you can't pick things that are over and above your financial or your financial capacity. Ask the other parent to support. And genuinely, a lot of times, the monies are not being exaggerated. Because you see, when you're raising children, there are all these miscellaneous expenses that come up. Sometimes you've budgeted 10,000 that month. Things were a bit expensive in the market. Yeah. So your budget will be about 12,000. So sometimes when you're too specific about an amount, it might bring problems when you're trying to now ask for a higher amount, because you need to justify, and it's such a headache. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine trying to raise children and then we are here fighting over this.
Yeah.
So I say, if you can itemize everything, pick the things that you're able to pick, ask the other parent to support you with that.
Mm.
Sometimes there are those who say they want everything written down, we are going 50-50. If that works for you, well and good.
Yeah.
However, when you go to court, the court will look at five things primarily,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
That is shelter, that is education, that is medical, clothing, and food. Five things, because you know the court is now operating at the level of the ordinary mwananchi.
Yeah.
So the court will say, you know, one parent do school fees and medical, then give a sum of maybe 10,000 to 20,000 a month. Then mother do shelter, do clothing or whatever. So depending on again how much each parent is earning, the court will be the court will be able to now apportion responsibility depending on that.
Mm.
So if you're able to settle this without going to court, I advocate for that, because I can tell you, for the court, it doesn't want to hear, oh, nanny, my children do this on the weekend. The court doesn't have time to entertain that.
Yeah.
You know, these are luxuries, so to speak,
mm.
okay? Because the needs are those five things.
Mm.
So the court doesn't have time. Oh, my children go on holiday, da, 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 da. The court doesn't have time for that. But if you can settle that, it is good for you. It is good for everybody. You know, you're in control of the situation rather than being forced to now adjust or, you know, do things that really you didn't want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because once the court puts its foot down and gives an order, you have to obey.
Something that I had heard before about maintenance issues is that one can go to the company that employs the other parent and demand that their maintenance is sent to them right away when salaries are paid. I asked Ivy if that was true.
Now, and I want to clear that I have seen on, and I don't know whether it was on Twitter, there was something that was misreported, that you can just have somebody's salary attached. It doesn't work that way, okay? So if there's an order that has been given by the court, say pay maintenance or pay fees and da da da, and somebody is not complying, what you do is you go back to court and you file what we call an application for execution, okay? So you can ask the court either to issue warrants of arrest against the person for disobedience, or you ask the court to issue warrants of attachment of salary. So only then, if you want the court to give you now an order for salary attachment and the court has agreed, only then can you attach somebody's salary. But you can't just attach somebody's salary. However, sometimes the organizations which are very strict when it comes to such issues, okay? So if one parent raised a complaint with HR, so I know of companies that are very strict, which would, you know, in fact, jeopardize your job.
Wow.
If you are not even, you know, taking your parental responsibility seriously. So sometimes, yes, you can be reprimanded if you work for those kind of organizations, but otherwise you'll not just be able to attach somebody's salary like that. Mm-hmm. You wake up and you go, give me his salary. It doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. So you have to get a court order. You know, life is very unpredictable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and a lot of ladies will say that they don't even care for support from the other parent because, you know, they are able. But I have seen situations where life happens and you're not able to take care of the child. And now you start to look for the other parent. I have seen it myself. So it's important to allow the other parent to take responsibility. If it requires you to go to court, court is a headache.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes court is a headache. You will get the orders, but somebody will still not comply. But I like to say, just go to court, get an order. You can always rely on that order. Because when now life has happened and, you know, maybe you don't have the money that you used to have, and you're now starting to look for this person so that they can pick up the tab, it might be very difficult for you at that point. Yeah, even finding, sometimes you find them, they've moved on, they've got another kids. There's a standard you had, you know, maintained your child in. You want them to maintain that standard, but they can't. But it's just good for them, for the other parent to take up responsibility. Yeah, they must. In fact, they must take responsibility because even the law says, and even aside from the law, I mean, you know, for me, I don't understand how you can be sleeping and you have no idea how your child is doing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even ethical. It's not good for people to just leave children to the other parent. It's really not fair because sometimes these parents who've abandoned their children later on come asking to be in the children's lives.
I asked Ivy what other issues or misconceptions come up with co-parenting.
One of the things is selfishness.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and selfishness, I would explain it this way. You don't want to extend grace to the other parent. And it could be in terms of, let's even go to now the access. Okay. So a parent is supposed to access the child, pick the child up maybe Friday, 5 p.m., and return them Sunday, 6 p.m., okay? Then the children are returned, okay, maybe 30 minutes later, all right? And it is now full-blown arguments. It's war. You have returned the children later than the time. If it's, for example, not something that happens frequently, you know, it's, you know, life happens,
yeah,
traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
So extend, first understand that the extra 30 minutes, the children spent them with their parent.
Mm.
It's not, that's what I'm saying, so it's, people view it as, you're really trying to upset me, that's why you brought them 30 minutes later.
Yeah.
There are those who actually but want to upset you, but don't be too selfish. Because then you're like, they must have done this because they wanted to punish me or they wanted to upset me. You see, so just think of it as, you know, the children spend an extra 30 minutes with the other parent. Or for example, one parent is not being able to, you know, provide the way they would want to. And you know it, because you see, people who've been together know each other's financial capacity. Yeah. Don't be selfish about, you know, they must pay this, they must pay this, they must pay this because they are either a man or a woman. Mm. Okay, because that's what other men or women are doing. Mm. Your case is different from everybody else's. Okay, so don't want to punish them or because they are not able to give you a certain amount of money, they can't see their children. Yeah, yeah, because we have that a lot. Mm. Where, you know, if you can't give me this amount of money, then forget about your children. They don't have that kind of money. Okay, so don't, I see that a lot. There's a lot of selfishness. People don't want to extend grace to each other. And it's work. I say raising children in a normal functioning two-parent household is work.
Yeah.
Now, parents who have separated are dealing with their emotions, the children's emotions. Mm-hmm. Things are, I mean, you can imagine one day things just, you know, go haywire, go left. You were with this person, then everything is just all over the place. You have to move houses. You have to move, yeah, the children. You have to move the children schools. So it's usually a lot of adjustment for everybody. So if you can try and be reasonable, you know, everybody is going through it. Okay. You know, so it's not you alone.
Yeah.
So if we can just, you know, let's be adults about it. Yeah. Let's be adults about it. And see how then we can reduce the stress for the kids. Yeah, that's one thing. People are very selfish when it comes to co-parenting. They don't want to hear the other parents. They don't want, it's my way. It has to be
yeah,
this way.
Yeah.
It has to be, if you know, it. I mean, it can be very stressful. And it is very stressful even for the parent who's making these demands, because you're tired, because you're always fighting, okay? And I say this, you can do your best when the child is on your end. But you can't control what happens when the child is on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's okay. It's okay. You know, you can't regulate an adult at the end of the day,
yeah,
right? So that's the other thing. You need to just be able to let go. And, I mean, pray to whomever you pray to. Or just, you know, trust that your child will be okay. Because sometimes that house is too small. That house doesn't have this. That house doesn't have that. My house has this. My house has that. It's okay.
Yeah.
When they go that side, the other parent is an equal parent. Let them parent the way they are able to. Because, you know, everybody has a different parenting style. And that is why you're able to parent with your partner. Because they are you make up for their shortcomings.
Mm.
So now, if the child is going to the other side and you're unhappy with, I don't know, A, B, C, D,
yeah,
you can't always be in charge of that. Yeah? Because you can't regulate, and you know,
yeah,
your co-parent, because they're an adult. So it's okay. It's okay to, you know, breathe and let go. It takes time. Of course, it takes a lot of time. It takes months, years. But you learn to just let go, that
yeah,
it's okay. Friday is here, you know, they've gone. You trust that they'll come back on Sundays. And you continue. Now you're able to now readjust and you start to live life.
Mm.
Then another thing, I think I also notice people don't realize how much they are affected emotionally.
Mm.
It's not just the children, even the adults. So if you're able to get therapy, okay, because you're also transitioning, it's a difficult time.
Yeah.
If you can be able to get into therapy, please do. Because sometimes you don't realize how the whole process is difficult for you. And you know, sometimes when you're very emotional about something, objectivity takes a backseat.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it could be something very small, but you blow it out of proportion because you're also emotionally stressed and drained.
Mm.
So if you can, and this is for, I mean, both genders, because sometimes I hear men don't need it. Everybody needs it.
Yeah.
Everybody needs it. please go. Sometimes even I tell parents, even if you're not together, get into therapy together so that the therapist can help you learn how to co-parent. There are people who are unable to communicate with each other. They can't. They absolutely can't. You need to learn to communicate with the other parent. Otherwise, that's, I mean, you can't always have lawyers writing letters to each other. You know what I mean? He did this, write a letter. She did this, write a letter. I mean, you need to learn how to communicate with time. It comes with time. Of course, I don't expect that, you know, today somebody has offended you, tomorrow, hey, you're kicking. But it comes with time, but you need to. So if you can get a third party to assist you to just, you know, transition into now the new, you know, the new space, please get the help. Yeah, it's very important. I think people don't realize how much it affects them, especially for the dads.
Yeah,
yeah, because, you know, moms generally will come and cry, you know, moms, they will cry, in the office, you know, and that's some sort of reprieve, and yeah, and they'll be more open. Yeah. And I'm speaking from my experience. Yeah. But I say, please, if you can, please pay for therapy and go to therapy. Yeah. Again, another misconception, maybe as I conclude.
Yeah.
Never think that whatever happened in your friend's case is what is going to happen with yours, okay? Mm. Or the assumption that because the court gave these orders in a case involving your friend, the same is going to be applicable to you. I hear that a lot. You know, my friend even said, oh, they were told rada. Mm. You know, even the court said rada. The court handles every matter depending on the facts, okay? Mm-hmm. So every decision is on a case-to-case basis. So it could be that your friend, of course, your friend's situation is not as, you know, it might have a bit of similarity, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
So please don't try to compare your journey.
Mm.
Yeah, don't compare your journey. And even if you're in court, don't think that because this happened to your friend, it's going to happen to you.
Before we wrapped up, I asked her to share some tips that she had for co-parents during this holiday season.
So if there's an order already, nothing bars you from reviewing an order.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this there's a caveat though.
Okay.
There's a caveat, okay? So if that, let's say the court has given half the holidays to one parent and the other half holidays, and Christmas is falling in your half, and the other parent requests you whether they can have the child for Christmas, I don't see why you can't be open to that, okay?
Mm.
Yeah, just because the court has said, sometimes people are like, the court has said, okay, yes, the court has said, that's why there's a caveat, the court has said yes, but, you know, if it makes the children happy, you can exchange. You say, you know, have them for Christmas, I'll have them for New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that's how a lot of times these holidays, there are people who choose to bundle Christmas and New Year's together. There are those who say that the children will be with this parent on during Christmas, then New Year's with the other parent. So it's okay. You can exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, even if there's a court order in place, you can always, you know, work around something because it could be you want to go to Shags, you want to have the children go to Shags because even the other cousins are coming to Shags for December. You can ask the other parents and it goes down to what I was telling you. You can extend grace and, you know, don't be too selfish.
Yeah,
because if the children want to go to Shags, they haven't seen their cousins, you know, you can understand that it is for a good cause, okay? But, you know, you agreed that you will return the children to me now towards the end of the year so that I can have the New Year's with them. Others who want to travel out of the country, if you're the parent with the kids and the trip, you're the one who's facilitating the trip, you pay for everything. The other parent, if, you know, they feel that they're attached to contribute, why not? But there are those who say, it's not my trip, I'm not paying for it. But you see now when you're on the same page and you're, especially for parents who are now, you know, at a space where they are friends actually, it is easier because, you know, the other parent can even chip in. In fact, sometimes even they will go on these holidays together, all of them. It happens.
Yeah,
they're not together. They're co-parenting and they'll just go on holidays together.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know, if it makes the children happy, then why not? Sometimes, however, there are those who, especially in custody cases involving a resident and a non-resident, you need to be very careful because you have to, you need to ensure that there are measures if the other, if especially the non-resident is traveling out of the country, you need to have some sort of measures to ensure there's the return of the kids. Yeah. So that is usually another thing during this period where somebody can decide to go and go completely with, you know, with the kids and you're left hanging. So you need to have measures to ensure, to try and ensure the return of the children.
I want to thank Ivy Kathungu for taking the time to share her expertise with us. If you'd like her services, just reach out to me and I will link you up. Special thanks also go to Cynthia. You are a gem to this podcast and your support means everything. Thank you for continually opening up your life for us to learn from. Do you have any topics or ideas you think I should explore on this podcast? Please send them to me. I have received quite a few which I'm absolutely excited to get into. So send them over to me. There's a link to do that in the show notes of this episode. Remember that you can show support for this podcast by donating to the show or by sharing these episodes with friends or your community that you think would find value in them. Any support goes a long way into getting these episodes to you for free week after week. Next week, we go into the fourth episode of the Holiday Survival Guide by answering this question. How do parents with kids who learn or develop differently, with a special focus on autism, handle this holiday season? A season that has the potential of being very overwhelming. See you then. Bye.